Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to this week's Living Torah. And here we go, continuing in Matthew chapter 7. I don't know if you guys, and I'm sure everybody in the United States is watching what this weather is doing down in the south, Pensacola, Mobile, 13, 15 inches of rain. You know, I lived in that area, and that a little bit east of there. And when you're like 7 feet above sea level, it's just a lot of rain, and the sewers, everything backs up just really fast. There's nowhere for it to go, and so it's a very, very difficult time for them down there. And then on the other side of the country, we've got Arizona, New Mexico, up into Colorado now. Our son-in-law sent me a picture. In fact, it was Shabbat, of the fires outside of Fort Collins that are up in the mountains. Good thing the wind was going north up there, so they're out of danger. But it's you got one extreme on one coast and the other extreme on the other side. Lived in Florida, seen that. Lived in Colorado and have seen that. I'm not sure which one is the worst to deal with. Denver having tornadoes. Of course, they were only F1, EF1, EF2. Okay, still a tornado. Just a lot of crazy things that are going on. And for anybody that has said, well, I just don't need to consider anything as far as preparation. A case of water in the house, just some canned goods, things like that. It's just good common sense. And why people think, well, if I go buy a case of water, that's not faith. I just can't see that. It just doesn't make sense to me. These are difficult days, and of course, I think they're leading into some much more difficult. But that's not really the subject. If we get to Matthew chapter 24, we'll talk about that more in depth. But and probably we'll do so in the coming months. But we're going to go to Matthew chapter 7, and we're going to pick up in verse 7. Before we do, I thought about something this morning. I was just kind of, my brain never really, I was explaining this to some folks this weekend. My brain never really turns off when it comes to the teachings that I do, the written and also the video. The last thing I do when I'm sitting here doing all the encoding is looking at next week. And as I'm driving to Canada this week, driving back, and I'll get in, God willing, on next Tuesday and sit and record on Wednesday. And I will have already kind of put a lot of thought, a lot of prayer into these verses. But consider this. That over the last, how many weeks has it been? Maybe 10, 12 weeks, something like that, maybe a little bit more. I didn't go back exactly. Matthew chapter 5, Matthew chapter 6, and now we're in Matthew chapter 7. If we were to go back and just start reading Matthew chapter 5, seeing the crowd, Yeshua walked up the hill and sat down, and he started speaking. And we started reading there in verse 3, and we just kept on reading over to through chapter 5, through chapter 6, and to where we are in chapter 7. What would it take you to read that? At a the sun is right here, and I'm kind of having to dodge it a little bit for a minute. How long would it take you to read those verses? 4 or 5 minutes? If you spent some time really, really considering it, how long do you think that it took Yeshua to speak these words, even if he's pausing, at just the right places? 5 minutes? I mean, I think it would take, I think 5 minutes would be an extreme, really. Probably more like 3 or 4 minutes to speak these words. And so I've taken, 12, 15 hours to teach these. Consider, especially those of you that grew up in churches, how many hundreds, probably thousands of hours have been used to teach these verses. How many sermons, 30-minute sermons or hour sermons, whatever, have come out of these verses? The incredible amount of wealth that are within these verses. is just at times overwhelming. In fact, how many hours, this may be something you've never thought of, how many hours of Jewish Midrash have been done kind of based upon these words? Though they didn't know that they were basing it upon the words of Yeshua, but they were using things like the Babylonian Talmud, the words of Hillel, who was the grandfather of Gamaliel. I think it was the grandfather. If we go back into those writings, into the Babylonian Talmud, into Hillel, and various ones, Yeshua is not bringing forth new thoughts. Everything that he's saying here has already been said. Why? Because the Babylonian Talmud, the prophets, Hillel, what were they doing? They were expounding on the same document, the same books that Yeshua was expounding on. He was going back to the Torah, so were they. It would be like somebody, expounding on the Constitution of the United States. And then, 100 years later, someone else taking those words that were expounded upon, the expounding words, I'm trying to say this right, and then expounding on those. And somebody said, wow, those are new words. No, they're going back here, they're going back here. Everybody had the same foundation, okay? Everybody in that little very quick illustration had the same foundation. The same is holding true here. Yeshua had the same; was using the same foundational words that people that wrote the Babylonian Talmud, that Hillel, various ones, they were all expounding on the same document, the Torah. And you know what? They're coming to the same conclusions. And with that, Yeshua makes, I think, just a very subtle, in these verses of chapter 7, and I think specifically chapter 7, verse 7, making a very subtle hint of a change. For those who have been Shema'ing, and I know Shema'ing is not a word, but it's the act of Shema. And what is Shema? Shema Israel, out of the book of Numbers. It is, out of the book of Deuteronomy. Hear, O Israel. But it's the word Shema is to hear, hear intelligently, and hear in a way that produces action from you. And so for those who have been hearing, instead of just listening, but those who have been hearing and have been trying to absorb these words in such a way that then they could leave from here and then do something, Messiah starts to make a little bit of a very, very subtle change to those who are listening as a spiritual man, as opposed to anyone who has been listening kind of from a carnal mindset. Okay, the sun's going behind the clouds. Good. It's like, going back to do not worry, things like this. There's two ways of thinking about that. Oh, if you're worried about the physical things, that's not the right way to do it. But I won't use the word worry, but if your heart is toward the spiritual, well, there's other aspects of these scriptures that you're going to reach for. What's the difference between a carnal mindset and a spiritual mindset? I think this is very important that we catch this before we go to Matthew chapter 7, verse 7. The carnal mindset thinks from the outside in. The spiritual mindset thinks from the inside out. Let's go back to, Samuel. And when he walked into the house of Jesse, he looked at the first of the brothers, and he said, wow, he's got the physique, he's got the looks, he's got the height, he's got everything that's needed. That must be the one. And the infamous words, this is the Almighty, Yud Heh Vav Heh, does not look at man from the outside in. He looks from the inside out. And there's a good place to really ask ourselves a question. How do we think? In what manner, if I put down, spiritual man here, carnal man over here, and drew a line between the two, where would you place yourself in the midst of that? A lot of this depends. You can actually prove this depending on things you see. Somebody that you see. Are you always judging someone on their outward appearance first? Well, they look at them. Look at the way they dress. Look at this. Look at that. Or are you waiting to get to know the person? The way they dress, all these different things. The way they act. You don't know what's coming about through that. Okay, but do you, once again going back a few verses, do you pass judgment quickly upon outward appearance, or do you wait to see what's inside the person before you? And there is a place, of course, of righteous judgment. I think we talked about that a little bit last week. The carnal man is self-centered. The spiritual man is God-centered. So once again, put it down on paper. Spiritual man, carnal man. Where are you at in there? Are your thoughts during the day? And you and I know. There's a whole thought process that we go through on a daily basis. Your brain doesn't turn off. I know some people that appears it does, but your brain continues, and you have thoughts that are coming. And where are those thoughts on a daily basis? Are they more centered toward him or centered toward us? When situations come and go in our life, things happen. Do our thoughts turn toward him? And the old adage of, what would Yeshua do? What would the Father do? Because, see, Yeshua would do what the Father does. Okay? And so that's where we're actually heading with this. If your thoughts are normally toward, well, how do I look with others and all these different things? You're thinking as a carnal man or a carnal woman. And that's where these verses are trying to change you. Okay? With that, keep asking, and it will be given to you. Keep seeking, and you will find. Keep knocking, and the door will be opened to you. Now, the obvious question has to be asked. Keep asking what? Well, this is the test. This is that subtle transformation that he has made, is that if you are thinking as a spiritual person, when he says, keep asking, your mind, your heart, your being, everything that you are, thinks, keep asking regarding him. What is it that he would want me to ask? What is it he would want me to be doing? What is it that his direction would be bringing forth in my life? But if you're thinking as a carnal person, then you read these words of keep asking, and it will be given to you, and you immediately go to, ha, I need a new car. I could sure use a new house. Wow, if I could just win the lottery, everything would be fine. I can guarantee you one thing. If you win the lottery, it doesn't make everything fine. I was talking to a friend of mine this past weekend, and we were discussing this whole concept of the end times. And one of the things that we were discussing is how, and this really kind of off subject, but I think it goes along with what I'm trying to say here, is one of the things about the end times that I have, I don't think I've ever heard anybody really speak on a lot, if any really, is the purpose of the end times. Okay, what's the underlying purpose? There are many that, you know, let's say the pre-rapture, okay, pre-tribulation rapture thing. What that basically does, it takes our dysfunction that we are today and moves it to the heavens. Well, that didn't do a whole lot of good, did it? There are others that say, well, you know, we're just going to go from here to here. We're going to take our dysfunction from here to here. One of the things about the end times is changing us from this carnal mindset to a spiritual mindset, to where when he says, ask of me what you would, we ask something based upon his desire, not based upon our desire. One of the things about the end times is removing some of our dysfunction, because he's not into just taking dysfunction and changing places with it. You know, it's like if you ever moved anywhere, pack up all the boxes. Yeah, that mirror is still the same. You know, it may be a different mirror in a different bathroom, but the image looking back at you is still the same. That which you brought with you is still there. And what he desires for us to do is have that transformed. One of the things about transformation is it takes time. He says in the next verse, keep asking, it will be given to you. Keep seeking, you will find. Keep knocking, and the door will be open to you. This is not something that's just it's not an instantaneous thing. As we really desire things to, you know, well, if I can just, back to my church days, sorry, Kathy was probably out somewhere. I just have to listen to the phone ring for a second. We want to do these instantaneous things. And especially in our American culture, they didn't leave a message, they hung up. Oh, okay, back to the scriptures. Where was I? It takes time, okay? This is the thing that you say. Keep seeking and you will find it. Keep knocking and the door will be open to you. We desire this instantaneous mentality of instant soup and instant tea and instant coffee and instant Christianity and instant holiness and instant messianic ease and all these different things. One thing I can see in the Torah, in Scripture as a whole, but in the Torah specifically, is that he works with people over time to make them into the person that he desires them to be. You know, the old adage, it takes about 30 years to grow an oak tree. I can attest to that. I was just in Florida a couple weeks ago at my mother's house. And years ago, it's now been probably 35 years ago, my stepdad planted a little tree, a little oak tree. It was about probably 3 or 4 feet tall when he planted it. And here it is 35 years from now, and the thing has taken over the whole backyard. It would take a tree surgeon to come in and cut this thing down. The base of it is about 3 feet across, 3 or 3.5 feet across. Thing is huge. It covers the whole backyard of my mother's house. It takes a long time to grow an oak tree. You can put on a carrot in about, 60 days or so? Which one do you want to be? All right? If you're one of these instantaneous, you know, change me now. Yeah. If he answers that, you may in the end be a carrot, you know, or an early girl tomato or something. If we allow him to do the work that he desires us to, that he desires in our life, it's going to take time to do these things. Next is, I lost my train of thought with the phone ringing for some reason. For everyone who keeps asking receives it, he keeps finding. He who keeps seeking finds, and to him who keeps knocking, the door will be opened. Verse 9, is there anyone who, if his son asks him for a loaf of bread, we'll give him a stone. Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him a snake? So if you, even though you are bad, know how to give give your children gifts that are good, how much more will your Father in heaven keep giving good things to those who keep asking him? The reason I kind of stopped there is when came the Messiah, this is back in 1986, we had in our church, we had a time of prayer before service, and there'd be four or five people, men usually, that came in there. One of them was an old pastor, and this was his favorite verse. And though he was pretty much scared to death of anything having to do with the gifts of the Spirit, extremely, extremely scared, at the same time, probably every week, I heard him quote these scriptures. You know, these scriptures bring us to the place of, I think it goes back to the teaching about Father, is when we start asking of him, the scripture says very clearly that he is going to answer those things. As long as we have started to make that transformation. You know, it's kind of like the prayer of, if you go out and pray for a new car, you may and may not get it. Probably, you know, I mean, most people that keep praying for the new Mercedes normally don't get it. You know, those that pray to win the lottery, I don't think they do. But when you pray a prayer of, Father, make me into your image, make me think like you do, make me act like you do, make me make decisions, bring me to the place, transform me into the person that will make decisions like you do, I can guarantee you, with beyond a shadow of a doubt, he will answer those prayers. And why is it that a lot of people will go through life and never pray something like that? A lot of reasons. Number one, they don't want to take time, the effort that it's going to take. The it says to knock and keep on knocking and keep on knocking, and eventually those prayers will be answered. And there's actually an aspect here that he's speaking of you're going to have to work for it. I'm not just going to give you this easily, but you're going to have to work for it. Why? Because that which we work for, we appreciate. That which we are given, just, you know, hi, here, you know, if you go out and you work for $100, you know, you really slave over it and have to put in some blood, sweat, and tears for a $100 bill, you treat it different than if somebody just walks up to you and says, hey, just thought I'd give you $100. Here you go. You know, you go out and you'll just do whatever. You know, it's like times of gift giving. You know, say you give somebody something for Hanukkah or whatever. You give them a gift card. You ever received a gift card? How easy it is just to go to the store and say, you know, I would never buy that for myself with my own money that I worked for, but since it's somebody else's money, I think I'll just buy this insignificant thing. It's kind of the same concept. And in the midst of that, it goes back to the concept of the Father, that we're going to have to learn to trust him. And I kind of feel, I can't speak for you, but I do receive enough emails and various things from many of you. This is still something that we deal with, of truly trusting him. You know, and what I've found is that through the years, he brings us to places, and he'll kind of let us settle there for a little bit. Sometimes it's a short season, sometimes it's a long season, and then he pushes us again. okay, time to get out of the nest. Time to put away the you know, all those things that you think that you knew about, you know. It's time to move on. Oh, no. Can I trust him to do this? You know, I've kind of gotten comfortable here. I like it here, you know. Oh, no. And he keeps pushing. He keeps pushing. And I find that the more I trust him, the easier it is to move on. But if I get to the place and I'm going, okay, well, I've trusted you in this and this and so far, but I don't know if I don't know if I can give you that part. Well, that's going to be the difficult one to deal with. But he's going to answer the prayer. Okay? He's going to continue to move us. And if you're a person that doesn't like change, and I guess not many of us really enjoy change, you know? I mean, it's just not something that we do. It doesn't come naturally, okay? Most of us, okay, kind of like to be able to get a little routine going, not just in our physical life, but in our spiritual life, and, okay, I'm kind of set here, and then all of a sudden he says, no, it's time to move on. And the farther you move on, the smaller the details we get a hold of. I'll give you an example. Last weekend, we were talking about Shabbat in our congregation here. And, you know, most of the people in the room have been keeping Shabbat for quite a few years. You know, the average would be probably over 5, 6, 7 years maybe that most of the people in our group that were here the other day had been keeping Shabbat. And so I said, okay, we're going to go back and we're going to consider Shabbat. Well, you know, we know Shabbat, right? And I went over to these verses in Isaiah chapter 58, starting in verse 13. If you hold back your foot on Shabbat from pursuing your own interest on my holy day, if you call Shabbat a delight, Adonai's holy day worth honoring, then pursue it by not doing your usual things or pursuing your own interests or speaking about them. I remember the day, not that many years ago, that we were having conversations of, well, should we do business on Shabbat? Should we, you know, go to the store on Shabbat? Should we buy? And there's people today that are still having that same conversation. And that's okay. Okay, I'm not back to judging, okay? Not judging you. There's people that are having that same conversation today of, well, should we, you know, is it okay to go to the store? And you know, they're not really our servants and all these things. I got through that one a long time ago. In our home, in our family, we do not go to the store on Shabbat. I don't buy things on Shabbat, period. Even if it's on eBay, I'm on Shabbat. Don't do any kind of business on Shabbat. But yet, here's what those scriptures say. If you will honor it by not pursuing your own interests or even speaking about them, you mean that during Shabbat that I shouldn't be talking to friends of mine about fishing or hunting or golf or the local sports? You know, you see those, I mean, it's Oklahoma, right? We're in Oklahoma. Thunder. It's something. You know, the worship of the Thunder, the basketball team, has just gone over the top crazy. I could care less. But is this saying that I should not even speak? If I had an interest in the basketball team, should I not even speak about those things on Shabbat? I think that's what that verse says. And why? Because he's so mean and nasty and doesn't want... No, He wants us to spend a day with Him so that He can give to us that which His desire is, to make us conformed into His image, so that we will begin to ask in accordance with His will. Okay? But, yeah, I've kind of gone all over the place trying to get to this, trying to deal with this subject. We've got to get to the place of trusting Him. It goes all the way back to the what I was talking about a few weeks ago of the Father. If you were raised with a father that you didn't trust, this is going to be more difficult for you. You're going to have to make that transition, okay? But that transition is worth the effort. It's going to take effort. It's going to take time. It's going to take trust. In the end, you're going to be transformed into the person that He created you to be. And it's going to happen from the inside out. But understand that it is going to affect, I mean, this is not one of those either ors, okay? Well, I'm a spiritual person on the inside, but a carnal person on the outside. I think Paul had some things to say about that, didn't he? Transform from the inside out. It is going to affect our insides. It is going to affect our outsides. When we're transformed from the inside out, it's going to affect your appearance. It's going to affect the way that you look, the way that you look at others. It's going to affect the way that you know, it's going to affect everything about our lives. It's going to affect our wallets. It's going to affect how we do things. It's going to affect our very being. Everything becoming transformed into His image. And in the midst of that, He says these words: always treat others as you would like them to treat you. That sums up the teaching of the Torah and the prophets. Now, notice that He does not say that replaces the teaching of the Torah or the prophets. Here's the big thing. In Greek thought, things are this or that. Okay, yes or no. In Hebraic thought, the answer is a lot of times yes. This verse that He's saying, well, you know, is this about the Torah and the prophets? Yes. Is this summing up the Torah and the prophets? Yes. Is this expounding on the Torah and the prophets? Yes. In order to expound upon the Torah and the prophets, they have to be in place. So that's another one of those great scriptures to use when somebody says that the Torah is done away with. By the way, He links the Torah and the prophets together. In this verse is where people get the golden rule. Okay? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And if you, I saw something years ago that was done that people were asked, you know, if that was a verse. And it was astounding, the number of people, maybe some of you, if I asked, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, is that a Bible verse? Most people say yes. And it's not. It is a concept. It's something that Yeshua speaks of pretty close right here. In fact, this verse goes back to almost a direct quote from Hillel. Okay, this is a principle that comes out of the Torah. To do unto others the way that you would have them do unto you. This is what the Torah is speaking of. And what the Torah is, I mean, Yeshua will later on sum it up in, you shall love Adonai your Elohim with all your heart, soul, and resources, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. What's He doing? He's pointing everybody back. Always pointing people back, excuse me, to what the Torah says. Go in through the narrow gate. For the gate that leads to destruction is wide, and the road broad, and many travel it. But it is a narrow gate and a hard road that leads to life, and only a few that find it." Now, let's consider for a moment this thought that the Torah has been done away with. Has Yeshua given us enough in these verses from chapter 5, chapter 6, and part of chapter 7 to give us a road? No. I don't see a road here. I don't see a road map here. I see color here. I'm leaving, and one of the reasons I'm a little distracted today, besides I've got FedEx coming up the driveway and the phone ringing and all these kind of things, is my mind is, and Kathy knows this really well, is my mind's already heading toward Canada. Okay, I leave tomorrow morning about daylight for Canada. It's just something that happens with me, and I wanted to record this week. I didn't want to just blank out on this weekend, but it's my brain is already about 2/3 of the way there. Okay, so just bear with me as I walk through this. It's just the way my brain works. I can't change it. Miles sent me a map the other day, and on the map there is the detail. There's the road. Okay, it's, you know, you go this road and that road and highway this and highway that and be up on 35 and I can't remember all the others. And then around the road there's colors. You know, there's a you know, this is a yellow line, and then he made a red line along the way, and you know, he wrote to this side, this is the best route to go, and he gave me like three different maps. Okay, so I have the detail here. And if I want to have a little bit expounded on, he gave me a little bit more of a line. He gave me more color. Back to the sports illustration is that you have in sporting announcers, you have two announcers. You have the guy that does the details. You know, he hit the ball. And then you have the guy that gives the color. And he hit it the right way. And this is about this guy, and this is his stats of how many times he's hit the ball the right way and all this stuff. You have detail, you have color. And so what is Yeshua doing in the process of expounding these words? He is adding color to the detail that's already been given. The narrow road, the narrow gate, the narrow road that leads to that gate has already been defined in the Torah. And now Yeshua is coming along and he's expounding on how to keep on that narrow road. In fact, is that not kind of what the prophets did? We talked about this past weekend. If the Torah lays out for us a road, and I believe that it does, what were the prophets doing? They were speaking to Israel and to us today when Israel strayed off the road, then the Almighty would send a prophet to bring them back onto the road. And the same thing holds true. And what we make a mistake in today is thinking that the prophets are defining the road. I think the Torah defines the road. The prophets are there to keep us on the road and also to give signposts, mile markers, to let us know how far along the road we are. I'm working on a message right now that'll be, God willing, be available at the end of the month. And it's about this subject. As, you know, we always want to know what's down the road. What's going to happen a year from now down the road? What's going to happen, you know, next week and next month? And what's over that next hill and stuff? And that's not the way that He works. He gives us a road. He gives us a light for our path, which shows us the road right in front of us. And if we begin to stray off of that road, He's given us the prophets to bring us back to the road. He's given us Yeshua to add more color, more meaning to the road. And then He's given us mile markers. Matthew chapter 24, Isaiah, Jeremiah, all of these different prophets along the way. These are mile markers along the road. Our job, our focus should be making it to the end of the road, to get to the gate, that narrow gate that leads to life. He says that there's a broad gate, a broad road that leads to destruction, and many travel it. There's a narrow gate, and I don't like these next words, so I'll just skip over them. That leads to life, and only a few that find it. You know, I can skip over the words all I want. They're still there. So I'll go back to it. But it is a narrow gate and a hard road that leads to life, and few that find it. Few. You want to be a part of the crowd? The majority? That's not it. And I know that in the, you know, in Revelation it says there's a multitude that no man can number. But a multitude that no man can number, you know, out of what have been probably 11, 12 billion people that have walked on the planet since the creation. Out of that 11, 12 billion, how many billion are going to be by the time of the end? It's going to be a few that find it. It's going to be a narrow road. Not one based upon my opinion or your opinion. Not one based upon necessarily my likes or dislikes. Because as I'm walking this road, it doesn't matter if I like to eat shrimp along the road. God says, you want to stay on the road? Shrimp aren't allowed on this road. Pork's not allowed on this road. Christmas trees are not allowed on this road. Paganism is not allowed on this road. Why is it we're seeing people that are continuing to lay those things down and come to a revelation of what the Torah is really all about, who Messiah is in the midst of the Torah, because they're coming off the broad road and coming onto the narrow road. And I believe that as we get closer to the gate, we'll see more and more. But in the end, it will be a few. You know, if you're afraid to be alone, this is not the right path for you. Because you're not going to have a majority of people walking on it. If you're a kind of person that always receives your self-worth from what others think, this is not the road for you. Well, it is the road for you, but it's one that you're going to have to make some changes if you're going to keep walking it. It's going to be a difficult road. And I don't want to be the bearer of, you know, negative prophecy or whatever, you know, bad news or whatever to you, but it's the words of Yeshua. This is not the easy path. The moment it becomes easy is maybe the moment that you need to consider, am I on the right path or not? Okay, let's go back, kind of wrap this up, because I've got to get packed up and get things going. Asking, if we've come to the place of actually allowing these verses, these words that Yeshua has spoken already, to transform us, at this moment, you know more what to ask for. because you're beginning to ask according to His will, and you're learning to trust. We're learning to trust Him. That if we ask for an egg, He's not going to give us a serpent or a stone or a rock. He's not going to give us that which will hurt us. He will only give us that which will nurture us, that which will strengthen us, and that which will put us more firmly on that narrow road that is going to lead to a narrow gate that is going to lead to Him. I think that's what it's really all about right there. So, all right, with those words, I'm not going to move on into the next verses. Are really going to go together with the false prophets and then right on through there of the lawlessness. Those are going to be, I want to be able to really spend some time and work those scriptures together because I believe they're so, so important for our day. So with that, Shavua Tov, have a wonderful, blessed, and prosperous week. And by the time you get this, Bezrat Hashem, God willing, I'll be in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and we'll be about halfway into our conference up there, and be turning around, coming back, and the weeks continue on, and be recording for next week. So, God willing, see you then. May Hashem bless you.
Yivarechach Adonai v'yishmarecha Ya'er Adonai panav elecha v'yichunecha Yisa Adonai Panavelecha V'yasem lecha Shalom.